Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
So are we going to start with the Stat Waddy game?
Stat Waddy game. All right. Okay. So I'll go first. Okay.
Go on.
The Sub Pop label in 1980. All right. Home of Grunge, based in Seattle. And in the 1980s, they had various groups signed to them. Later on, of course, Nirvana. Many of these bands had kind of names that were raw and somewhat unvarnished. And here are five, so you have to spot the fake. Signed to Sub Pop, late 80s, okay? Bambi Slaughter, Blood Circus, Scratch Acid, Naked Ray Gun, and Cat Butt.
Oh, the last one, Cat Butt.
Cat Butt, okay? So it's Bambi Slaughter, Blood Circus, Scratch Acid, Naked Ray Gun, and Cat.
Well, I have no idea. They're all really good, really plausible. I'm gonna take a guess that the ringer is Scratch Acid.
Oh no, it's not. No, it's Bambi. I mean, impossible to tell. Slaughter is in fact the ringer. Although Bambi Slaughter was, of course, the name. Of course, that's what it is. Was the title of a song by Nirvana. So it's not far off. But it's exactly the kind of thing that's. Keeping with the sensibility of the times.
It's a very good name, Bambi Slaughter.
It's a great name, Bambi Slaughter. It's a good name for a band, isn't it? Yeah, so there we are. All right, what have you got?
Well, I tell you what I've got. I've got some suggestions sent in by a listener, Paul Jackson.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Paul had an idea and he supplied some candidates and I've filled it out a bit. And so these are comics making records based on their catchphrases.
That's a good idea.
Isn't that a good idea?
That's a great idea from
Paul Jackson. Okay, so here are five, and you have to work out which one never happened.
Okay.
Larry Grayson, Shut That Door.
That's good. This is already plausible, isn't it? Yeah.
Cannon and Ball, Rock On, Tommy.
Yep.
Morecambe and Wise, Get Out of That. Yeah. Bruce Forsyth, I'm in charge. Tommy Cooper, Just Like That. Which one of those didn't happen?
That's really, really good. Shut That Door, I'm going to say straight away, did happen because I can remember that record. And I can also remember, I think, Rock On, Tommy. But I'm in charge, Just Like That, and Get Out of That. I'm tempted to say... they're all absolutely plausible. I'm tempted to say, actually, that it's the Morecambe and Wise, because Morecambe and Wise, would Get Out of That? Was that the catchphrase that they would have traded on? I suppose it was. I'm going to say it's Morecambe and Wise. Am I right?
You're right.
Oh, no. Right.
All the rest are real. Larry Grayson, Shut That Door, came out in 1972.
I remember that.
Cannonball, Rock On, Tommy.
Rock On, Tommy.
Bruce Forsyth, in 1960, did I'm in Charge. Tommy Cooper, Just Like That. I don't know exactly when it came out, but it was real. And Morecambe Wise, Get Out of That. Yes, you're right.
That's a brilliant one.
It's possibly not their catchphrase. I mean, they never really had one catchphrase, did they, Morecambe Wise?
What do you think of it so far? No, they didn't, though. They didn't.
Short fair, hairy legs.
Bring Me Sunshine, they did, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And... I've been catching some clips, old clips of theirs on YouTube the other day. My God, at their best. It was comedy out of thin air. It's just out of nothing. It's not even the script. You know, it's just what they do. It's just being funny men. You know, it's absolutely remarkable. So
just so beautifully routine, isn't it? There was a script, wasn't it? But they went off at tangents. There are bits where Eric is clearly improvising. And that's what makes Ernie fall apart, isn't it? Is that he's not expecting it. And I love that.
He has all kinds of things going on. But I'd still find hilariously funny the repeated visual gag that they used to do at the end of all those shows, which was that Ernie was out front singing some swing favourite, and Eric was crossing at the back, leaving, wearing a brown Macintosh and a carrier bag. He was on his way home, you know. The idea that Eric was always on his way home while Ernie was still out there, you know, doing the songs. My God, we were blessed, weren't we? With them?
We were blessed. And that routine that we all used to do at school, you remember the old self-strangling from behind the curtain?
Yeah,
everybody. Christ, that was funny.
Drag through, fantastic.
Weren't they on the same bill as the Beatles on, I think on one of the Ed Sullivan shows, the very first Ed Sullivan show?
I think they
were kind of bottom of the bill with Morecambe and Wise, I'm fairly sure.
They might have been on one of them. Morecambe and Wise went over before the Beatles, I think. I think they tried a few times in America. It never really worked. Obviously, never worked for them. It's hard to believe that it ever exported to London from the north of England.
I know.
Let alone to New York. So Lily Allen,
who's launched a sex aid to encourage women to talk confidently about pleasure. As CNN's headline put it, and fair enough, absolutely right.
Have you seen the advert?
No.
Have you seen the, oh, she's done adverts.
Oh, right. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
What happened to the advert?
They're really clever. I have to say, I think this is an inspired move by whoever, by either the kind of the sex toy firm, who I think are called Womanizer.
That's
the brand.
Yeah,
and by her, I think the hookup between the two is absolutely inspired, because she has written about this stuff in the past. She wrote a feature in Stylist magazine about best sex toys or whatever, which is a fairly unprecedented thing for a pop star to do, I would have thought. Of which more in a moment. But now there'd been some kind of hookup, and they've launched this thing. Presumably in time for Christmas, okay? And
of course, that's right.
Obviously. And
in the stocking.
I tell you, there will be once you've gone public with this, there will be a ton of them in the stocking, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And the advert is very much like those adverts that you might see around about the same time of the year, featuring film stars or pop stars or whatever, telling you about their association with a fragrance is what they normally do, isn't it? You know, I've worked hard with the people at Lancôme or Coty or whatever to develop a fragrance that I feel expresses, you know, what the same qualities that's got people to buy loads of copies of my record or tickets to my show or whatever.
Yeah.
And all this has done is taken the same thinking and applied it to the far more lucrative area of sex toys. So it's just Lily being sort of Lily and attractive and friendly, and she's the perfect person for this, you know, absolutely ideal person, you know, because it all fits with her image about, you know, oh, well, I'll talk about anything, me, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Well, her songs have been, there's nothing she hasn't tackled in her lyrics, you know. It's and a brilliant idea.
It's a brilliant idea.
I really think it's just fantastic.
And
also, I might say it suits lockdown a little bit, doesn't it? I think, I don't know.
I suppose I hadn't thought of that.
Just a thought.
They're probably doing it. Probably do another line called The Lockdown, you know.
Yeah.
It'd be a specific device to deal with that period. But you see, we were talking about this yesterday, weren't we? And I've been thinking about it ever since. That finally, here's a pop star, you know, lending her kind of image and her weight or whatever to a subject that pop stars know a huge amount about. Which is wanking. You know, for years we've been having to tolerate pop stars telling us about how to bring peace to the world, or, you know, order to industrial relations, or you know, more warmth in the family, or how to sustain love affairs. All things that they know bugger all about absolutely nothing about.
But years of being on the road and stuck rather bored in remote hotels.
See, this is the great truth. This is the great truth. You know, people like to think that that the artist, you know, makes their way off stage at the end of a triumphant gig and goes off to have, you know, extraordinary sexual encounters with hordes of glamorous members of the opposite sex. Not true in the overwhelming majority of cases.
Well, it's just to go back to the Ibis for a jodrell.
I was thinking, this is great truth. I do
remember an interview with Sting once in Q, and somebody said to him, it was one of those things where it was reader's questions. So they said to him, do you ever have a wank when you're in some, you know, distant hotel or something? And he said, sometimes if I'm a bit lonesome and I can't get off to sleep, he said, give it a polish. Absolutely. I've never heard that expression before. Oh, God.
It's brilliant, that idea. And I introduced as Exhibit A in this. Do you know this record? Jackson Brown.
Oh, yeah. Running, it's got Rosie on it.
It's got a song called Rosie, which you wrote with a guy called Donald Miller. And it's a brilliant song because it's written from the point of view of a kind of sound engineer, I think, really, who tries to meet up with a girl at the show. You know, she was standing about backstage or whatever, and in the end of the evening, she goes off with the drummer. He gets nowhere at all, and so he returns to his hotel room to seek consolation. It's really poignant, this, to seek consolation in Rosie, who's clearly his red right hand, as the old song goes. Because the refrain is, Rosie, you're all right, you wear my ring. That's so good. Yeah. When you hold me tight, Rosie, that's my thing. When you turn out the light, I've got to hand it to me.
I've got to hand it to me. It looks like you and me again.
Looks like Rosie. Is that the one? Me again tonight, Rosie. It's just an absolutely, it's a genuinely lovely song. It's a beautiful song, you know. Whereas I feel so many of the songs that have been openly about masturbation, and there have been quite a few. Pictures of Lily.
Well, I don't know that's openly, but it's implied, isn't it? Because he says he can't sleep at night. His dad says, try putting these pictures on your wall. That might help, you know. But it is fairly obviously. But not as obviously as things like Lucinda Williams' Right in Time. Remember that one where she's lying in her bed? She takes off her watch and her earrings and takes off her bracelets. You know, and I lie back and moan at the ceiling. You remember that one?
Oh, that's pretty specific. Of course. Of course.
But also a really poetic one was Billy Bragg's Since Swinton's Day. This is, with my own hands, when I make love to your memory, it's not the same. I miss the thunder. I miss the rain. That's very good.
Very good. Very good. So, I think Lily's done a good day's work, this is, actually. And I'm damn sure if it succeeds, like I think it will, everybody else will be thinking, bugger it, should have done that.
Why didn't I think of that? Precisely.
I know. What did I think
Cindy
about?
Lauper should have done it. Cindy Lauper's She-Bop was an early...
Oh, that's true.
Do you remember that one?
There's I Touch
Myself.
I've seen
it every night in tight blue jeans in the pages of a Blue Boy magazine. Hey, I've been thinking of a new sensation. I'm picking up a good vibration. I want to go south and get some more. So that's pretty explicit, isn't it?
There's a Tom.
There's a great song by Tweet. Do you remember that came out in 2002? Tweet. Oh my!
Oh God, I've forgotten that.
And she comes with an R&B single. And she
That's
comes
a really
back
good
from
record.
A party, really kind of turned on by all the people. It's a really good record. And and then she passes a mirror and she sees herself in the mirror. And then that's the moment when she finds she's finally found someone she fancies enormously. And,
well, you know, as Woody Allen famously said, you know, why not masturbation? It's sex with someone I love.
Sex with someone I love.
I was thinking about there's an old Tom Waits thing when he did that double live album, Night Hawks at the Diner, when he was big on what he used to call this kind of semi-song poetry rap.
Yeah.
Things that he used to describe as his nocturnal emissions, didn't he? And I can't remember. There's one of those I haven't listened to in years, where he talks about going back to the hotel And on his own, he says, oh, same old thing, making the scene with a magazine.
That's right.
He said, and there's a pause. There's an audience there laughing. He goes, I'm not weird about it. I don't tie myself up first. Which I thought was really good.
It's excellent.
So, you know, if anybody...
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. There are so many... Lady Gaga had a song called Dancing in Circles, and there was Sex With Me by Rihanna. So there's two people right in that market who could have got there first and could have got out some kind of...
Lily's the perfect person.
Lily's
just the perfect person. And by God, he'll be going mad this Christmas.
I think he will.
There's people probably ordering them as we speak.
Genius.
The Word Podcast. Prime cuts of popular culture served fresh each week.
So Spencer Davis died the other day at the age of 81. Really interesting life. I mean, part of a group that had three absolutely phenomenal records that I've never, ever seen out of vogue. I've always seen contemporary.
So keep those are... Running,
somebody help me and give me some...
Yes,
keep on running, somebody help me and give me some love here. I mean, they're fantastic records. And then, you know... Bits of little side projects and groups of his own and bits of production work and formed a super group at one point with Randy Meisner and Denny Lane. And then eventually finished up from the late 70s, was living in Catalina Island off of Los Angeles. Yeah, I mean, presumably there's some money still rolling in from those records. Because
well, you would hope so. They're the kind of records that, you know, still get used on commercials and contracts and radio playlist or whatever. I'd say the funny thing about Spencer Davis, which makes him almost unique of that generation of the 60s, which is he'd been to university. So he was a bit older, which, you know, accounts for the fact, you know, he was in his early 80s. And, you know, so he's a bit older than the kind of McCartney generation, isn't he? You know, he is. Two or three years older, because he'd been to university, he'd been and done German at university, and then he became a teacher. You know, so
this is right, because
he taught for a year.
If you look at YouTube, there's lots of clips of him, or various clips of him, on German television, talking in German, being interviewed in German, and talking to the crowd in German. It's really impressive, actually.
Oh, absolutely. Really useful skill. Germany, then as it is now, big music market, huge music market. So if you can talk to the audience in their own language. I saw the Spencer Davis Group I went and checked as to when it was, because I had thought it was later in the 60s, but it wasn't. It was 1964. And they were on a tour, which was headlined as the Rhythm and Blues Tour, and I've actually got the program in front of me that I've managed to find on Tinternet, and this was the evening. I saw them at the ABC Theatre of Wakefield, I think, from the bottom of the bill. This gives you an idea. 1964.
Cool, this is an amazing thing. You would have been what, 14, 13?
14, yeah. 14. This is a package tour, 1964. Height of, you know, Beatlemania. You know, it was actually a year after Beatlemania, 64. So from the bottom of the bill, Blues by Five, a group called Blues by Five. The Mark Lehman Five, who I really liked. I always used to be a fan of the Mark Lehman Five. So much so that I inscribed their name in Biro on the back of my army surplus backpack, you know, that we all used to wear.
What a very cool name to select. They were very hip, weren't they?
They were very hip. I put them on tie. You always had to pick one hip name to put alongside the Beatles and the Stones or whatever. So Mark Lehman Five, Wayne Gibson and the Dynamic Sound, which is...
It sounds like another game of Stack Waddy, doesn't it?
It does. It does. Followed by, now we're getting into the air is rare. Now we're getting amongst the really famous groups. The Downliners Sect came next. You remember the Downliners Sect?
I do.
Then the Spencer Davis Group. Then Byrne Elliott and his clan. Then the Soul Sisters. Then, top of the bill, Manfred Mann. So that was your...
God, that's one bill. That's incredible.
That's one bill.
And so Spencer Davis would have got, what, three songs, two songs?
Probably something like that. Because don't forget that also this whole show would be repeated later in the evening. You know, so there would be like a 6:30 show, and then there'd be an 8:30 show or something like that. But the funny thing about the Spencer Davis Group on that bill was that Stephen Winwood was probably, I don't know if he was old enough to legally have left school, you know, at that stage. You know, he was introduced as little Stevie Winwood, pretty much, you know.
He would have been, probably been 15.
Oh, okay.
He was born in the middle of 48, I think. Yeah. Oh, okay. Little Stevie Winwood, that's amazing.
And they played, and here's the funny thing, that they played their new single, which was a cover version of an American R&B hit called I Can't Stand It. It wasn't particularly a big, I don't think it was a hit, really, but that was the new single. And so they introduced this as our new single, and they played it. And they also, I'm pretty sure they did Georgia On My Mind, you know, because that was his party piece, Steve Winwood. He could do Ray Charles. You know?
Yeah, Ray Charles.
And then, they must have done, I can't remember what else they did. But here's the funny thing. They were then followed by Bern Elliott and his clan, and then the Soul Sisters, who were American R&B, you know, two women who'd been brought over. And their hit single was the same I Can't Stand It that Spencer Davis Group had done.
And the Spencer, you got it twice in the same evening.
No, but here's the weird thing. Spencer Davis Group were also their backing group. So the Spencer Davis Group played I Can't Stand It at kind of 6:45 and then came back and played it again.
Did their own version of it?
They, no, the other way around.
Yeah.
They'd done their own version.
With her, the other way around. Sorry.
You know, so it's such a really odd thing to do. You know, I suppose it just indicates that was at the point when it was just starting to switch over from cover versions to people doing their own stuff. Because I suppose at that stage, Man for a Man, you know, were quite a big deal, and they were top of the bill. Their big hit at the time was Doo Wah Diddy, which was the Exciters, an American, you know, R&B hit record. That's how people did it. So, yeah, that's I remember seeing that. So Man from Man, and then what comes after Man from Man on the program that I got in front of me here, Mark, in that running order?
Oh, they're not top of the bill, though.
They are top of the bill. What comes after them? What is on the program? God Save the Queen.
Of course.
You had the national anthem at the end.
Isn't that bizarre?
At the end of a show.
How did people respond to it?
They kind of stood up. I wouldn't say they didn't stand, you know, bolt upright like my father and Uncle Tom would during the
salute.
No, but yeah, they stood. Yeah. It was just part of the evening. You know, some scratchy old recording of God Save the Queen will be played through the speakers, and that's how it would work. So there you are.
God, that seems bizarre. Seems the first group I went to see was Soft Machine. It was quite a slightly different experience.
I suppose, anyway, yeah, the world.
But also,
go on.
Very rapidly, in just a few years. But also, Jerry Jeff Walker died, didn't he?
Jeff Walker died on October 23rd. I suppose he's one of those people that's just really known for one song.
Mr. Bojangles, which I absolutely adored. Yeah.
Mr. Bojangles is still a fantastic song. And it's based on, supposedly based on his experiences in a drunk tank, in a police
cell. Yeah, a guy that he met in a cell. That's right.
Who claimed to
be... Was it his version that was the big hit? It wasn't.
Well, no, I don't know if it was even ever a big hit, but it was famously covered by loads of people, most famously by Sammy Davis Jr. Because here's the funny thing about a song called Mr. Bojangles. The guy apparently in the drunk tank claimed to be Mr. Bojangles, because he wasn't Mr. Bojangles, because Mr. Bojangles was a real person, Bill Bojangles Robinson, who was a famous African-American singer, dancer, really big deal. And I think he died in the late 1940s or something like that. And so a guy in a drunk tank claiming to be Mr. Bojangles was a little bit like somebody who drives fast claiming to be Stirling Moss, you know. It was kind of, you know, oh, I'm Mr. Bojangles, you know.
Yeah.
And Sammy Davis Jr., who had genuinely had a huge dancing career as a child entertainer. You can find clips on YouTube of
Oh, yes.
Sammy
incredible tap dancer.
I think he actually, I'm right in thinking there is actually a clip of Sammy Davis Jr., really junior, dancing with the real Bill Bojangles Robinson. I think there may be, so that may be a further connection. So he took up this song, you know, as a wonderful image of a kind of broken down entertainer, I suppose. And it's still a fantastic song. It makes some really good records, yeah, Jeff Walker, one way or another. I was intrigued to notice that his real name, he was one of those guys who wore a cowboy hat pretty much all through his professional career, and yet came from New York, you know, so he'd never punch cattle or anything like that.
That was your ticket, though, was if you wanted to be seen as a country star, wasn't that what you had to do?
Well, but yeah, he's one of those, there are a few, because his real name was Ronald Crosby, you know, not Jerry Jeff Walker at all. It reminded me about Ramblin' Jack Elliott, who, of course, his real name was, oh God, what is it? Odnapots or something like that. It's a very, very kind of East Coast immigrant name, you know. It's not Ramblin' Jack Elliott. And he similarly wore a cowboy hat and kind of reinvented himself as a kind of dust-blown cowboy. Are you looking up his name there?
His name was Elliot Charles Adnapods.
Adnapods, there you go.
Elliot Charles Adnapods. You're almost exactly right. That's brilliant.
The other one.
Funny he changed it.
Yeah, funny you changed it. And the other one who adopted a cowboy hat and also had very kind of similar antecedents is Chip Taylor. Chip Taylor, the great Chip Taylor, had wrote Wild Thing and Angel of the Morning and loads of other hits. And had done loads of really good stuff in his own right. He's similarly a kind of, you know, it comes from the East Coast. You know, he's, I think he wrote a song called I Wasn't Born in Tennessee. You know, to make plain that this was just completely an aesthetic pose that suited him. You know, and so
how many people did that? My God, I mean, you could say that the John Fogerty did much the same thing.
Yeah,
John
Fogerty
kind of completely repositioned him. He was actually from the West Coast, but kind of rebuilt the whole notion that he was from the bayou and the swamplands of.
I suppose it makes you look again at things like Eddie Grundy out of the Archers wearing a cowboy hat and trying to style himself as a country western star. It's no more ridiculous than Ramblin' Jack Elliott doing the same thing.
Absolutely.
Or Jerry Jeff Walker, you know. They're every bit as far removed from the world that they're thinking about as he was. So, he died, I think, yesterday. At the age of 78, Jerry Jeff Walker.
Good innings.
This is a junction in the Word podcast. It separates that bit from this next bit.
Here's a funny thing. Records, long playing records, that came out 40 years ago this month. 40 years ago, Mark. So if you do the
usual... October 1980. Oh, yeah, 40 years back from that.
40 years back from that.
Second World War.
Dunkirk.
Dunkirk. Okay. It's Dunkirk. Battle of Britain.
No, it's Battle of Britain. Got through the Battle of Britain. Okay. Yeah. 40 years ago this month. There you go.
Oh, my Lord. Kilimanjaro. Two sleeves for that. There's the sleeve with the actual mountains. It's very rare that happens. There were two versions, weren't there?
Why did they do that?
That's a good record.
I never understood why they did that. Anyway, 40 years ago this month, okay? 40 years ago this month. Here we go again.
Oh, right, Boy by U2.
40 years
ago. That's astonishing. Good Lord.
I mean, okay, and the third one. Coming up right in here, please. 40 years ago this month. Holding up the wrong way around.
Oh, right, the river. Was it that?
Bruce Springsteen, the river. 40 years ago this month. And I don't know why.
I remember going to see him at Wembley around that time, maybe
Later. Probably the year after.
That's the record that converted me to Bruce Springsteen. And that's the song, The River. Amazing.
It's just, I can't get over how long ago it is.
I know.
In all three cases.
Yeah.
Somehow it seems longer than most of those calculations do, you know, because normally, I don't know why it seems so long, but, you know, still plugging away, and there's a new Bruce
Springsteen
record.
Which of those records? There's a new Bruce Springsteen record out now.
Yeah. With the same band, largely.
The same band.
And largely the same idiom, you know. 40 years.
And a few songs that I think he'd reworked.
Well, quite wild songs, yeah. Certainly.
Isn't that happening more and more, don't you think? The people writing songs are thinking, let's go back and rework stuff from before. Because the big issue they've got is, if you're writing a song now, do you write it about a word that world that acknowledges what's happened?
Yeah, that's
right. In which case, it's very hard to predict what that'll be like in a year's time when that comes out or whatever. And will people really want to hear that, or they'd like to escape from it? But if you don't write about what's happened, then you're producing a world that, you know, again, seems quite hard to connect to. Imagine if you were a novelist, you'd have the same problem, wouldn't you?
I suppose so.
How do you write about life now? You know,
it's a great challenge, isn't it? No doubt about it. And as we realised, we talked to Billy Bragg this week, didn't we? Word in Your Attic, which you can see on the YouTube channel and unusual outlets. And, you know, Billy's been, he's been sitting there for like 8 months or whatever. I think he said that, didn't he say that the only revenue he had was he'd sold a couple of old posters?
He's been selling old posters. That was amazing. He's been digging up posters out the loft, hasn't he? And old bits of merchandise and flogging them on eBay. I mean, not in a kind of cynical way, because people really want them. But he said, I like to be making money, and this is now pretty much my only revenue. It is. He's got a bit of royalties from a few record sales. He's got a bit of radio, but not much.
Yeah. No, I know.
I mean, his principal form of income is live performance, which doesn't really exist, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it's the same with Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band, you know, but... I think it's easy to think that all these people are, because they're famous, they're sitting on a pile of cash, or the postman turns up every day with a royalty check. No, doesn't happen at all. You know,
and also these guys are programmed to work. Like McCartney just gets up in the morning and thinks, I've got to be making a record. You know, that's the way he's operated all his life.
Yeah, you can't. If you're Paul McCartney, you don't take a day off from being Paul McCartney, do you?
No, you don't.
You don't go and read a book.
Obviously, it's very hard to sit in a deck chair for 2 weeks.
I suppose
drinking
it does.
Martini and pulp paperback.
I think that probably applies to a lot of these people. They're busy people, you know.
Absolutely.
They make themselves busy, but you can kind of muck about with a record for days, as long as you feel it's going to come out. But if you think it's not going to come out, you
know, I know
it must be
opportunities for procrastinating enormous.
Yeah. So, Alex, is Alex joining us? Are you going to beam in, Alex, and actually be in vision rather than just being in the background? Did we just hear him in the background going, "Ah, there you are.
There he is.
There he is.
Turn my blow heater off. Hang on. There we go.
All right.
On the silence.
So Alex
is up north, viewers. So hence he has a blow heater on.
Well, to northerners, I'd be in the south. To southerners, I'm in the north.
That's true. Where are you? Leeds? Isn't near Leeds?
The Warwickshire-Worcestershire border.
Right.
But we say Bath, so I suppose it's technically north.
Yeah.
Bath and grass.
That's it.
So what have we got to tell people about in any other business, Alex? I wanted to mention about, sorry, I'm trying to find my the thing on my screen here.
We have some new patrons.
Always good to hear about those. Go on.
Let's fly the flag.
Names. Here we go. So joining the ranks this week, we have Dave Collins, who is an Access All Areas patron. You get to be in the room when we do our crowdcasts.
Yeah,
right. Of course.
And also get your own special word in your ear, birthday treat.
Okay, of course. And we've done a bit of both in the last week.
It's a word in your attic done specifically for you, the patron.
We appear in your attic.
Digitally in your attic, and you can go through all your old records and get stuff out. For a show and tell. Very good fun.
Yes. We also have Stephen Dalywell, Claire Ashford, who is an annual accessorial area.
Right, okay.
Annual patrons, of course, if you subscribe annually instead of monthly, you get a 15% discount, which is not to be sniffed at, of course.
Absolutely.
Aidan Hampson and Rob Shepherd, who is also an annual patron. So welcome aboard, everybody. Hurrah.
And if you want to know more about any of that, just go to patreon.com/wordinyourear, where further details are available of which we have programs tailored to every taste. Is that fair to say? People can choose their level there. I also wanted to mention, because I only mention it about once every 2 years, it really does help if, having listened to this podcast, you could go on Apple Podcasts or wherever you normally get your podcasts and leave a comment. You know, whether it's a favorable one, but like I'm looking at those in front of me now, from John Pickles, who says he's not a great cyclist, but during lockdown has been trying to cycle every morning. And he's found the podcast via the Word in Your Attic. He says they're so funny, so engaging, and often a rant which very much resonates with my own. Well, that's good to know. And so you can even leave I don't care if you leave an unfavorable one, like Lil Beethoven has written one saying,
"You're going to read this out, Craig."
I don't care. Often interesting guests, though. Mark and David prefer to talk over their own answers and get in their own anecdotes, but mostly a couple of guys talking over each other and having a who can be the most pretentious competition. Mr. Hepworth usually wins. Yes!
give it my best shot.
Yeah, I'll approach the rest of the day with a spring in my stride. Yeah. Knowing that I win in the most pretentious contest. But obviously, you know, if you can, any kind of feedback very definitely helps keep the bright red ball of human discourse in the air.
In the air and off the beach.
And that, after all, is what we're for. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This podcast was brought to you by The Word.